fasten your seatbelts, and turn up your radio. We're going on a road trip.
Winter's over and the snow is gone. Go get your gloves and pull your work boots on. Gotta clear that patch, pick them stones. You know the sun is gonna warm those lazy bones. Winter's over and the work's just starting. Time to get busy in the family garden. Turning the soil and planting the seeds. Laying down mulch and pulling up weeds. Mowing the corn, row on row. Then you stand right back and you watch it grow. No, even little children gotta do their part and help the things are growing.
That's Wausau's John McCutcheon getting us underway today, as he does every year about this time for the annual Route 51 Garden Show. I'm Shereen Seewert, inviting you to join me for our yearly sojourn into gardening. It was a long winter and an awfully cool spring. But soon, at least we hope, we can start enjoying those long sunny days, buds forming on the trees, gorgeous flowers in our gardens, and delicious fresh vegetables on our dinner tables. Joining me today are two master gardeners, Pat Mersinski and Sharon Amernick, both of whom are longtime master gardeners of the Portage County Master Gardener Volunteers. It's a horticulture education program through the UW Extension program. So Pat and Sharon are here today to offer their tips and answer your questions throughout the program. As always, our annual gardening show is focused on those of us in the inclement climate of the northern half of Wisconsin. If you've got gardening questions, we encourage you to call now. The phone lines are open. The number to call is 800-780-9742. Pat, Sharon, welcome to the show. So pleased to have you here today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you for coming on short notice. Actually, Sharon, you got a call late last night. Our scheduled guest had a family emergency, and we thank you so much for stepping in at this last-minute notice.
My pleasure.
Oh, wonderful. Well, can you tell us first, what is this Master Gardeners Volunteers Program? Explain what that's all about.
The Master Gardener Volunteer Program is part of UW Extension. Volunteers are trained, they take a training course, and then actually take an open book test, and then are certified as master gardeners. It's a program that's throughout the state and throughout the nation.
Okay. That sounds interesting, and you've been involved for how many years?
I've been involved since the original program started in Stevens Point in Portage County, and that's over 25 years.
Wonderful. And you've been involved for how many years yourself?
About 7
Sharon?
Years, yeah.
Okay. We do have a caller. It is Carol calling from Marshfield. We're still getting her on the line. So in the meantime, I'm just going to bring this up. It was a very cold winter. It is just not warming up the way that we expected it to in April. So is that pushing the growing season back a little bit this spring?
I would say it's going to be a little bit before the warmth is going to enter the earth and be ready to accept the seeds that we want to put out there for the vegetables. And
is there anything we can plant now?
Well, I suppose you can go ahead with lettuces and some of those type of greens. But if the soil's too cold, even those aren't going to germinate well, especially wet soils. They're going to end up just rotting out. So you know, it's surprising, but a garden will catch up very quickly. So
yeah, once that soil warms up, I think your plants are going to just welcome that warmth and going to grow twice as fast.
What's the ideal temperature? I mean, what are we looking for this?
We're looking at, if you want to start with lettuce and kale, you can start with a 40 degrees temperature. Your optimum, your best temperature is like 65 is when you want to start planting your beans, your pickles, cucumbers, any other type of pumpkins, something like that, corn. I mean, it's the 65 degrees is the best one.
Okay, so we've got a little ways to go here.
And we're talking soil temperature, not air temperature.
Right. Let's get Carol on the line. Carol is calling from Marshfield with some questions about seeds and some questions about Japanese beetles. Carol, welcome to the show. Thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm trying to get the jump on the garden.
As we all are, yes.
If it's possible. And I know you answered questions about the vegetable seeds, but what about flower seeds? When can we sprinkle those out? Nothing, you know, really elaborate. Is it the same for the vegetables then?
So as far as planting flowers, are you looking for the optimal time to plant the flowers?
Right, flower seeds as opposed to flat.
Okay, thanks, Carol.
If you're starting indoors, that gets you a head start. I've got some marigolds going that I need for a particular garden. I've tried some zinnias, so I'm not as successful. I think direct seeding is the best. I would think most flower seeds are going to need those warmer temperatures.
Mm-hmm. I think the only thing I have started are petunias, and those are the finicky ones that do need extra time to be started early. So,
well, I've got to tell you, I'm a beginner when it comes to gardening. You ask my husband, he says I've got a black thumb. I can't grow anything. But this year, I'm really interested in vegetables, and we're thinking about some container beds for vegetables. What are some of the easy vegetables for people like me who are not very good at gardening in general? What are some of the easy vegetables?
If you're talking container gardening,
yeah,
you can do anything from a great big flower pot to 5-gallon buckets to straw bale gardening, raised bed gardening. In a sense, those are all container type gardening. If you're starting small with patio gardens, you really can't go wrong with a tomato. Look for the determinant. They stay small. They're not going to get 10 feet tall, so that they're more manageable. A pepper plant, sometimes people plant like a little salsa garden in one big pot.
Oh, that sounds like a good idea. Again, we're taking your calls, 800-780-9742, taking listener questions about gardening. What are your questions that you might have for our guest today as we get into the long-awaited growing season? Hanging baskets are always a big thing. They always look great in the spring when I get them. By midsummer, they're dried up. They hardly have any blooms. What are your tips for keeping them fresh and full of flowers?
I know to deadhead them is really important. As your blooms die back, you know, you want to deadhead them and get it shortened off and get them off the plant. And then that's going to encourage it to grow more blooms. So
okay, so picking off the dead stuff, mm-hmm, getting rid of that.
And potted plants need a lot of extra nutrition. They run out of fertilizer. So you really need to add something as it goes along. I know I'm not very good at that. So sometimes I use a potting mix that has sort of an extended 6-month fertilization. So that sort of carries me through. Sometimes things can get pot bound too. You buy something that really looks lush and it's like, well, yeah, because it's sort of overgrown in the pot, and it sort of overgrows its pot.
Okay. All right. So you really want to make sure that you're watching that. And if it does get that way, you should, repot it, put it in the ground, or put it just in a bigger pot?
Sometimes what you can do is you can take it out of the pot, and you can split it up. You can maybe make another pot out of it and just add more soil to it, and you can just split it up. Sometimes that's dividing them is good, too.
Okay. We talked a little bit about tomatoes. What is the best way to address tomato blight? I know that is a big concern. One of our listeners was making sure that I asked about tomato blight. What do you do about that?
The most important, if you're planting a vegetable garden, is to do rotation. You plant your tomatoes in one section 1 year and make sure you move them to the next section or far enough away. That's one of the most important that I found works for me. keeping them dry but yet moist. You want to do some mulching underneath them. Keep the bottom leaves, try not to sprinkle and wet them from the top. The best kind of watering system is from the ground, the sprinkling hoses that are in the ground.
So. Oh, okay. So you really watering them from the ground up isn't the best way to go?
In the ground, or the soaker hoses, they're called.
I mean,
you don't want to do the overhead sprinkler system if you can get away without having it, but you have to water them. But that's where your blight sometimes comes in.
Okay.
The leaves get wet.
I had no idea. Interesting. All right.
Well, of course, there's rain, so then...
Right.
Well, yeah.
You can't help that.
You can't help that, right? You can't. Well,
yeah. Natural rain.
We've had plenty of rain in the last week or so. Again, the number to call, 800-780-9742 with your questions for our gardening experts today. I have to tell you, I live on the southeast side of Wausau, and we have a lot of trees, which means a lot of shade in our yard. And it is a challenge to grow nice landscaping beds, you know, to have these beds in the shade. I know hostas are great in the shade, but what about some plants that will add some color? We'd like to add some color to those areas that, you know, not just the green, but what do you recommend that will grow well in the shade?
I like some of the perennials, the astilbe. Of course, they have a little shorter bloom time. Shade-tolerant annuals are always nice.
Specifically, do you have some that you recommend? I mean, the annuals that you can just throw in there every year for that color?
Impatiens are really nice for the shade area.
Oh, those are pretty, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Once you get them going, they're going to last the whole season. It's really nice to intersperse them between some of the hostas. There's also grasses that are shade tolerant. We think of most of the grasses as being very sunny, but there's a group called sedges that are actually more shade tolerant, and those would give you a little different kind of texture.
And some height, perhaps.
Not
so much?
No, the ones I have used are shorter.
Okay.
I think the sedges tend to be shorter than some of the other sunny grasses.
What do you think about adding some height? I'd like to have some height in the back of some of those beds.
I love ferns. I mean, Boston ferns. I mean, any kind of fern you can find, that gives you the height. Bleeding hearts are another beautiful, and that gets you a little bit of a heart-shaped flower on it. So those are really pretty for higher ones, yeah.
Sure, and I like the idea of ferns, but I also like the idea of the bleeding hearts because it adds some color. You know, it isn't nothing wrong with having a lot of green, but I mean, you want to have something that really catches the eye, wouldn't you say? I mean, you know, if that's what you're looking for.
Some of the hostas too have really quite nice blossoms. A lot of them are scented now, so they're very attractive. Absolutely. Every size, color almost, yellows, blues, different textures, striped ones.
So maybe I'm just thinking that plain old hosta. Right. And I need to look a little bit further, right? Okay, they are out there. All right. Sharon Amernick and Pat Brzezinski are our guests today for our annual garden show on Route 51. When we return, we'll take more of your questions. Be sure to call us now. The phone lines are open, 800-780-9742. I'm Shereen Seward. This is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio.
There's a place I can get to where I'm safe from the city blues, and it's green and it's quiet. Only trouble was I had to buy it, and I'll do anything I got to do. Cut my hair and shine my shoes, keep on singing the blues if I can stay here in Johnny's garden.
We're back on Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward. Master Gardeners Sharon Amernick and Pat Mersinski are our guests today. They'll take your questions about gardening in north central Wisconsin. The number to call is 800-780-9742. The lines are open, 800-780-9742. What questions do you have for our guests as you're planning your gardening this summer? So I've read two schools of thought now with regard to the impact that the harsh winter might have had on the emerald ash borer. I know that this is a huge concern for those of us with ash trees in our yards and in our neighborhoods. Do you think it got cold enough to kill those off, or do we still need to worry about that pest?
Well, the emerald ash borer larvae stays underneath the bark during the winter, so it is exposed to the cold. And with that polar vortex, there was a feeling that maybe we would lose some of them, but the populations will build back up
pretty quickly.
Yes,
so
that's thinking of our bug specialists in Madison.
Mm-hmm. Okay, all right. Yeah, I really wondered about that because there's been so much talk about the emerald ash borer and the way it will decimate the ash population as it continues to spread throughout the area. Shifting gears here a little bit, I like to grow some annuals for cutting and arranging. There's nothing better to me than having a gorgeous, bunch of flowers on my desk or in my office. What types of annuals make the best cutting flowers, and where should I plant them?
I really like growing flowers for cutting. I've sort of experimented with things. Probably one of my favorites are zinnias because of the absolutely gorgeous colors, different sizes. Another one that I really like is a tall ageratum. I like to use dahlias. The hydrangeas are a little bit tricky. They're nice for cutting. They're a perennial, but you have to cut them at the right time. If you cut them too early, they'll just wilt.
Oh, okay. When's the best time to cut them?
That's sort of an experiment. After they've sort of not really gotten papery, but aren't that weak green kind of new blossom.
Okay.
I like to use a lot of different things in floral arranging. I look around and see what's blooming. I've sort of experimented too, because you don't want to pick something and then it wilts in a day.
Have you ever tried Bells of Ireland?
Oh, no.
Oh, they are so pretty. They grow like a green bell, but they grow like in a clump of them, in a stalk. And they smell so pretty, and they look so neat with all the other colors of the flowers. So I think that makes a good bouquet.
And they're long-lasting, I think,
yeah.
Aren't they?
Yeah. Bells of Ireland, yeah.
Should try that.
Are they easy to find?
Just by the seeds.
Okay. All right. So you want to start that early.
Yeah. They can go right out in the garden.
They can. Yep. Okay. All right. What are some of your other favorites for cutting flowers?
I like gladiolas. That's one of my favorites. Gladiolas.
Oh, I love glads. They're so pretty.
They only last for so long, but the flowers are such a tall spike that they can stay for quite a while. Yeah, that's my favorite.
Absolutely. Again, the number to call, 800-780-9742. Our gardeners are here to take your questions about the growing season. I know it feels like the growing season is never going to get here. I mean, am I alone in this? I just have felt like nothing is coming up. My tulips are not coming up. Are you finding that to be true?
Tulips are up. I don't have a lot of flower buds, but I have a lot of green. So that's I said I had crocus, and they didn't last real long. I was disappointed. I thought they would have kept their color longer, but they're maybe afraid of the cold weather too. Who knows?
Maybe.
I've been watching some of my perennials, and boy, some things are just peeking out of the ground, but nothing much. But I've noticed this other years too. It's like, and all of a sudden they're there.
I mean, what's it going to take? Probably a
sunshine, maybe.
That's what we really need. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've had the rain. We now definitely need the sunshine, right? What about plants to attract butterflies? A lot of people really like those butterfly gardens. What are the best plants that you would recommend for people who want to attract those butterflies?
butterfly bush is good for butterflies. I know I plant a lot of, especially for the monarchs, is the milkweed plant. It's not the most favorable flower, but that's what they like. If you want to get monarchs in your garden, you want to plant some milkweeds. And there's a lot. I think they like just about any flower that's got something for them that they like. So
my my garden is a mix of vegetables and flowers. And boy, I've got the pollinators and the butterflies. They really like the zinnias again. I also grew Mexican sunflower, beautiful little flower. I shouldn't say little.
It
grows. It grows quickly to about 6 feet.
Oh, really?
Beautiful orangey red, mm-hmm. and that too. Really, the pollinators came to that.
Well, not to mention, I mean, I think that burst of color would be just lovely.
I'm gonna grow that again. It was beautiful.
Okay. All right, we do have a caller, and it is Margaret. Margaret, are you with us?
Yes.
What is your question, Margaret? Thanks for calling.
I very recently started hearing about the importance for using native plants in our gardens, and I wondered, could your guests talk about perennials that can replace the non-native flowers that that we see all the time in garden centers?
All right. Thank you for your question. What do you think about that?
I guess my thought is to rely on your garden shops. I mean, there's some really knowledgeable people that are available at the garden shops, and they're more than happy to help you out with what's a local flower that's native. I know there's a lot of them that we can plant every year, but rely on them. They probably have a good information about that.
All right.
Have something, Pat.
I do a little research online. You want things that I know there's probably books and all about it. One of the if you're looking more for prairie type flowers, you might check with I forgot the name of the garden.
Prairie something, isn't it?
Prairie Nursery. Nursery.
All right.
Even their catalog has lots of ideas.
Mm-hmm. All right, great advice. The number to call, 800-780-9742, taking your calls about gardening, your gardening questions. If you have something that is vexing you that you need some advice on, definitely give us a call. We have JC on the line. JC, thank you for calling. What's your question?
My question is, if either of the guests have had luck in replanting dahlias and ranunculus, because I believe they are tubers or bulbs and they aren't hardy over the winter, if they've had luck planting those again in, next spring.
I've had some really good luck with some dahlias, but you do have to keep them in a place, in a cool place for the winter. We can't leave them in the ground. So I put them in boxes of sand below my basement, and they stay cool. I think that's what you do, Pat, right? Or
I don't have a real root cellar kind of thing, so I've sort of improvised. I usually store mine in peat moss, just sort of box them up. I should check them more frequently during the winter, but I did take a peek on them, and they look like they stayed quite nice. They didn't dry up and shrivel up. They should be a nice firm bulb. Ranunculus, I've never grown. It's beautiful.
They are beautiful, so I'm going to give that a try this year.
Okay.
So thank you, ladies.
Thank you so much for calling. Sure. We appreciate it. Again, the number to call, 800-780-9742. And we are taking your calls with your questions about your gardening concerns as the gardening season gets underway. It's our annual gardening show. We do have a caller, John, who is calling from Stillwater. John, thank you for calling. What's your question?
My plum tree. And my problem is I live right in the zone 4, zone 5, right in the kind of a transition. Is there anything I can do to help my odds of giving a zone 5 plum tree to survive over the winter?
A plum tree. Okay.
Well, sometimes we talk about microclimates. One area of your yard might even be a little warmer, a little more protected. One thing you don't want is a real sunny area where they're going to break bud and then end up the buds freezing. So that's a little tricky.
Protection, I think that's pretty important. Keep them somewhere where they're a little bit more protected, yeah.
Is there something that they can protect them with, or?
I'm thinking of other trees, actually. If they're not out in the open, in the middle of an open field, you want to put them somewhere either by the home, or have other little apple trees or other kind of fruit trees around them, which might help them.
As far as
mulching, heavy mulch or anything like that underneath them, or anything.
Well, I guess that's okay, but that's probably not going to protect most of what's above ground, and plum trees get too big to wrap them or anything like that. So I guess you just have to take a chance and see what happens.
Chance.
What variety are you growing?
John?
They're Italian plum.
Oh, okay.
They're the most delicious plum that you could ever grow in this area.
Ah, give it a try. Sounds good.
Yeah, and interested to know how it goes. Love to hear from you afterward to see how it goes. Thank you so much for calling me. We very much appreciate it.
All right, thank you.
Our next caller is Martha. Martha's calling from Eagle River. She has some questions about yellow tomatoes. Martha, thanks for calling. What's your question?
Well, I know the yellow tomatoes, they have some strains that are less acidic and they're yellow. I love Sweet 100 cherry tomatoes.
Ooh, yes.
Does Sweet 100 make it less acidic, or what's a good cherry tomato that's less acidic?
Are you looking for a cherry tomato or larger?
Yes.
A cherry tomato.
I think there's yellow cherry tomatoes. There's a yellow one, isn't there?
Salad tomato.
What was that?
Sharon?
A small salad tomato, cherry, grape.
My favorite one is Sun Sugar. I don't know about having less acid, but even kids will eat it and pick them right off. It is
that's saying something too.
And it's an indeterminate tomato, so it's going to grow tall. So it's nothing that you want to plant in a little pot. Another one, Patio Choice. I grew last year. They had both red and yellow. The problem with some of those special tomatoes is you're probably going to have to get them from seed catalogs and grow them yourself. I don't know. Maybe some of the garden centers, depends what you have. But most of the big box stores have the typical types of tomatoes, Big Boy and that type of thing. So some of those specialty tomatoes are a little bit hard to find. But up in Eagle River,
If I want the less acidic, I should probably go with a larger tomato. It'd be easier to find. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Sharon, you agree? I mean, I know you've got a lot of vegetables.
Yes, I've grown the yellow, and you can any size you can. I've grown. I mean, I've been happy, so happy. There's a lot of there's the acid is almost gone. I mean, they're just so delicious. I love the yellow ones.
All right.
Okay.
Martha, thank you so much for calling. All right. The number to call is 800-780-9742. Taking your calls all until 11 o'clock this morning on your gardening issues and questions, things that you're struggling with. So be sure to give us a call. You know, I've read that less lawn is better, that we should try to minimize the amount of lawn that we have. So what are some of the things we can do, plants we might be able to use maybe to minimize the amount of grassy lawn that we have in our yards?
Well, if you like more of a natural look, what we've done is we've gradually let the natural grasses and shrubs, native kind of things, sort of move into our sides of our lawn. That helps a little bit. One year, which ended up being a mistake, we decided we're going to take part of the lawn out next to the garden. And if you think that taking part of the lawn out and replacing it with the garden is going to be less work, that's not the case.
I would imagine that's probably quite a challenge, yes. So
a lot of people are doing more of the naturalizing with grasses and prairie type plants. I haven't really tried too much of that.
No, okay. Again, the number to call, 800-780-9742. It is our annual gardening show on Route 51. We encourage you to call in with your questions and concerns about the upcoming planting season. So what is the best kind of soil to use in containers? I mean, is there a specific mix that you recommend, something that you think would work better than others? Is just plain old dirt, or should there be some kind of a mix with mulch? What do you think?
I know you have to mix the different parts to it to make a good potting. You want to try with a good potting soil. You can definitely put some things on the bottom that the water will drain through, like clay, rocks, and then you're also get some. I can't think of enough compost. Get some compost in there too, and mix that in really well. And like Pat said, I do also use the soil. It's got the release, it's slow release fertilizer, so then you don't have to use as much fertilizer. That's a kind of soil that I like to use.
Is there kind of a rule of thumb how often you should fertilize, or is it, do you just do this, you know, once and then you kind of let that release throughout the season?
As far as container garden,
sure.
Like I say, I'm not real good at following through with that. I think some of the recommendations are almost on a weekly basis with a weak fertilizer. That's not my style.
I think if you ask at the florist shops where they grow the flowers, they fertilize at least every week, I think. Even when they're watering, they do add the fertilizer right to it. Okay. So,
And actually that brings up another question. How often do we water? I mean, should we be watering every day? Does it depend on the plant?
Depends upon the plant, of course, and I usually water until the water starts coming out through the bottom, and then I know I stop, and then that when you can feel the top of the soil, and you want to make sure that that's not real, real moist or real, real soggy. You don't want to let it get like that.
Okay. Again, the number to call, 800-780-9742. Sharon Umernick and Pat Mersinski are our guests today for our annual garden show on Route 51. When we return, we'll take more of your questions. So call us now at 800-780-9742. I'm Shereen Seward. This is Route 51. Back on Route 51, I'm Shereen Seward. Master Gardener Sharon Umernick and Pat Mersinski are our guests today, taking your questions about gardening in north central Wisconsin. The phone lines are open. If you'd like to get through, call us now. 800-780-9742 is the number to call. Again, it's 800-780-9742. Before the show started this morning, we had a conversation off air about Japanese beetles, and I told you a story about how I was in my pool last summer, reading my book, having a nice old time, and all of a sudden a bunch of Japanese beetles fell on my stomach and scared the wits out of me. And so that was the start of our Japanese beetle experience in the backyard. And since then, they pretty much ravaged everything in the backyard. Am I going to have them again this year? Once you have them, are you always going to have them?
They are pretty persistent. I know that they sort of go in cycles, but I don't think that they're going to disappear. It's interesting that even in our county, some people are just devastated. They'll defoliate a lot of plants. I have just a small problem with them. They'll munch on my raspberry plants. But otherwise, I don't see too much of them.
Yeah, we have the same problem on our raspberry patch. And what I'll take when I'm picking raspberries, I'll have a bucket for my raspberries and I'll have a bucket for the naughty bugs that I don't like, and I drop them in the bucket. So I pick both. I pick them.
So is that what you do? I mean, what is the best way to get rid of them, really?
That's worked for me. I fill my jug of water with a little bleach water and drop them in there and watch them die.
I had a lot die in my pool. Like, they didn't like the pool water. I was scooping them out every day, I felt like.
It's important also to know the life cycle of the Japanese beetle. They are a grub that winters in the lawn. So there are chemical treatments if you wish to do that. They love a nice lush lawn. So
so if I have a nice lush lawn, I have more.
that might be true.
Okay, well, I can tell you I don't have a nice lush lawn. It's kind of crummy, but maybe that'll help. I don't know.
Some people have used traps, and mostly what we've heard about that is that it just draws more in. Because
I had heard that too.
So if you're treating your soil, they come in from like a mile away. So I'm not so sure that that's the answer.
Aren't
either.
There organic sprays that I know our neighbor uses an organic spray, and he swears by it. He says it works for him. So
really,
mm-hmm. We with Master Gardeners, we really depend on the extension, the UW Extension literature and information to go to. So a lot of people, if you've got questions, just put in UW Extension. Put whatever you're looking for, and something's going to come up for you. If not from Wisconsin, and mostly it'll be Wisconsin, but there's some other extensions in other states, too, that have a lot of good information.
So there's information out there for people who have those kinds of questions.
And there's a lot of brochures that our extension, University of Wisconsin Extension, has available for a lot of these things.
Okay. The number to call again, 800-780-9742. Give us a call with your questions and your concerns about your gardens this year, and our master gardeners will be happy to answer your questions. So we do a lot of potted gardening, and every year I have about 20 pots with soil in my garage. Can I reuse that soil? How often do I have to replace that soil? What's the deal with that?
Go ahead.
I tend to reuse at least part of it and then add some new. For my potted flowers and those type of potted plants, I like to use a commercial potting mix that works best for me. Sometimes I mix a little bit of my own with peat moss and perlite and more of a regular garden soil. But I do use some of it over again. Sometimes I'll just pour it in the corner of the garden and use it for potting mm-hmm. up things the next year.
I usually like to put it, you know, dump it, like you said, half of it. I'll put half of it in the vegetable garden and till that in and helps the vegetables too. But still, the new potting soil is a good thing to do, at least half.
So maybe reuse the soil in a different way, but you want to put something new in the pots every year. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, that's something I was doing wrong. So that's good to know. 800-780-9742 is the number to call to have your questions answered with your gardening questions. What's the best way to mulch a perennial bed? I mean, what do you suggest?
I guess it's what's available to you. You want to, like, for me, I can get some shredded bark from the local forester. You can use straw. You can some people use grass clippings. I don't like grass clippings, but I don't know. What do you use, Pat?
As we're cutting the grass, we'll usually sort of use that along the rows, bring that in. As far as perennial beds where it's not the vegetable in the vegetable garden, we go with some of the local wood mulch, wood chips. That works well for us. It breaks down, but that just enriches the soil eventually.
Mm-hmm. I feel like no matter what, the grass creeps in to my mulch. I mean, what do you think is best for bordering those beds where you're using the mulch for landscaping?
We've used the plastic edging. Been pretty successful with that.
Okay. I've used brick. I have a pretty good supply of some brick, and so we put the brick around to make it, and you still get grass that sneaks in there, so you still have to work
sneaky,
on it.
Sneaky, yes.
Yes, it is sneaky.
Absolutely. The number to call, 800-780-9742 with your gardening questions, because believe it or not, it is going to be warm enough soon, and we're finally going to get that sun to get those plants in the ground and enjoy some of those incredible flowers and fresh vegetables. What about some of the other pests that we hear about? The lily leaf beetle, the jumping worms. What's the best way to address those kinds of pests?
I've had some experience with the lily leaf beetle, and all of a sudden it just appeared. It's a beautiful little red beetle, totally destructive with true lilies. It won't bother daylilies. I see it early in spring. It emerges from the ground, starts to work its way up the stalks, or the larva, well, and the adult, and can really devastate some of the lilies. I tend to try to pick it off by hand. There are some commercial organic and non-organic sprays, but that's a new pest that we've seen. It's in fact Marathon County was the first county in the state, I think, that found it. The thought is that it came in from the East Coast in commercial lilies, so it's gotten to be quite a problem. It really defoliates the leaves.
So what do you do? What should you do about it?
I mean, well, you can pick it off. Like I said, there are some commercial sprays. The beetle winters over, so watch for it, and you can get a jump on it. And
I think I saw such a late start of it. I kept watching my lilies and didn't see any, and all of a sudden there they were. Yeah. So they take a jump on you if you don't keep an eye out for them.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I have to ask, what's the best way to stake your tall and floppy, you know, some of they get so tall and floppy. I mean, do you just use a wood stick, or is there a better way to stake those?
I think the wood stake works pretty good. I mean, I have a huge amount of trellises at my house, so I use trellises as much as I can, but
to give them something to
support them on, yeah,
to support and that's decorative too.
Yeah, I have a huge variety of in my vegetable garden. I grow all my vegetables on ladders. I collect old ladders from painting glut, and they crawl. It crawls on them. So
I
have
quite a
variety.
Yeah,
it is.
I love that.
It is a good idea.
And if you're talking about perennials, if you can plan with another perennial that will support a tall perennial, that might be a possibility. As far as we've tried a lot of different things with our tomato plants, and I'm not so sure that we've found anything ideal.
Have you ever grown anything on sunflower seeds? Like when the sunflower plants
I tried
beans on that, some climbing beans, and that worked pretty good. But.
So you put the climbing beans next to the sunflower,
mm-hmm.
and that worked?
You try and train them to get up on that stalk, and as the sunflower grows, so do the beans.
Oh, that's interesting. That's a good idea. Again, there is still time to take calls. 800-780-9742 is the number to call. The phone lines are open right now, 800-780-9742. One of the things that I was curious about is the soil temperature. The soil temperature that's necessary to get plants really going, it varies, doesn't it? I mean, what can we plant now, really? And is there something that we can get in the ground right now?
I think we were talking, too, about that. The temperature that we thought, the 40 degrees was probably the warmest or the lowest that you could probably shouldn't plant anything before that. And it's lettuce, spinach, kale. Then you're looking at the next temperature would be 50 degrees, would be onions, and sometimes potatoes can go in that early as well, too. But 65 degrees is probably the best temperature for your beans and any other vegetable you want to put in the garden.
That's 65. What you really want to shoot for, yep. At least 65 degrees.
Yep.
So, and we're not talking about air temperature here.
No, this is soil temperature.
Soil temperature. So do you have to have a special thermometer to check that? Or, what do you use to ensure that you've got the right temperature?
I have a soil thermometer that I have available to me, but by the time I'm ready to plant my garden, I tend to plant everything at once. So by then, the soil is pretty well warmed up. Every year I think I'm going to get a jump on things and get those peas in early and the lettuces in early, but usually it doesn't happen.
Do you start from seed? Do you both generally start from seed when you're doing vegetables and...
I do some inside. So I've got tomatoes and onions. I've got peppers. I've got some flowers growing. I tried leeks this year, so that should be. Celery is always my biggest, hardest one to get growing. And this year, I think I'm going to have a good crop. Now, hopefully it'll continue. But most of them are the ones we start now. But your tomatoes, of course, and rest of the seeds you can put right in the ground once your temperature of the soil is what you want it to be.
Okay,
just about anything.
I think one of the biggest problems people have with growing seeds indoors is they don't have enough light. Most cases, seeds don't need light for germination, other than if you see on a seed package it says, do not cover seed. That's a seed that needs light to germinate. But for most of them, they don't. But once those seeds germinate, you need a lot of light. And a windowsill, in most cases, just won't do it. Another thing that people do is they often start things too early. 4 to 6 weeks before planting a tomato out, and tomatoes don't go out till the end of May, that's plenty. Otherwise, you're going to get tall, lanky plants that you don't know what to do with.
I suppose. I have lilac bushes in our yard, and I have one that's been there for, I've been in this house for more than 20 years, and the lilac bush has been there. It predates me. So it gets huge every year. I mean, and it gets weirdly misshapen. So I'd like to trim it and make it look nice, but do I do that in the spring? Do I do it in the fall? What's the best time to do that?
We're in the process of doing sort of the same thing. We built a home about 30 years ago, and there was the old-fashioned lilacs. And some of them are so overgrown. We've sort of taken a three-year approach. Every year we take out some of that old big stuff, and then you'll see new sprouts coming up. We're not real particular about when we do it. We'll probably be doing some of it soon. The recommendation is after flowering, if you really want to make sure that you're going to get flowering. But getting some of that old stuff out and getting some nice sunlight into the new things, and like I said, we're doing it over a few years. That's the way to go.
That's a good plan. You don't want to do it all at once. So 3 years is great.
I think this will be our third year. If I can get my husband to cut down some of those old ones where he puts his bird feeders.
that's always the rub, right? So we talked a little bit about butterfly, butterfly gardens. And what about attracting honeybees? And I mean, the good bees that we're trying to encourage the population. Are there any specific flowers or plants that you would recommend for that?
I will be in the garden, and all of a sudden I'll see just bees gathering around certain plants, and I don't really plant them for bees. One of them that was really surprising is garlic chives. They just covered those plants when they were blooming. And again, the sort of the same flowers that were attractive to the butterflies were attracted to the bees. They like the blooming raspberries, mm-hmm. So I'm sort of careful on what I apply. In the garden, I really try to limit any pesticides. I feel that's real important.
What are some organic ways that you can fight weeds and other? I mean, if you want to stay away from those pesticides, what's the best thing to do?
I know the extension office has got really good information about that too. But I think you can do, there's an oil spray, there's a mixture that you can use, I think, and I'm not familiar with it because I've never used it, but there's a mixture that includes oils of some sort, but Extension Office is wonderful for those things.
Okay, so really, that's a great resource for that people can use to try to get more information.
Right.
All right, sounds great. Well, that is all we have time for today on Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward. I'd like to thank our guests, Master Gardeners Sharon Umernick and Pat Mersinski. Our executive producer is Rick Ryer. Rick is also our on-air producer today. Special music today from John McCutcheon, Stephen Stills, and the Beatles. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. You can hear the archive of today's program at WPR.org/Route 51. Next week, we'll welcome Wisconsin author Victoria Houston to discover her new book and a library expert who will talk about the most anticipated book releases for summer reading. Until then, we're headed out of town.